Now, once again, here's Mark.
Good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, and you're welcome to join us at any time. We're talking cars and car stuff. And here's what works the best. You just talk about the car, the year, the make, the miles, stuff like that. And then it's a give and take thing. So I'll ask you, what are the symptoms that you're trying to identify, or what are the symptoms that it's exhibiting now, or specifically, what is it about the car that you kind of want help on? And that's kind of an easy thing to transition to. Then I'm going to ask you, does the vibration occur in the steering wheel? No. Does it occur in the seat of your pants? Yes. No, there is no vibration. Does the car pull to the left? No. To the right? No. Is there any abnormal wear on the front tires? When the check engine light comes on, I'm sure you've gone to the auto parts store and they give you a code, but the code doesn't mean that that part's bad. It means that part's seeing a problem. So has anybody done any analysis on your particular code to try to determine what it is? The answer to that kind of a discussion is simple, because probably 20 to 25% of the oxygen sensor codes we see actually necessitate the replacement of the oxygen sensor. The oxygen sensor simply tells the computer if the exhaust has too much fuel in it or too little fuel in it, and in reality we want the exhaust to be in the middle. Well, if you have a vacuum leak up front in the engine, it's going to yell, lean, lean, not enough fuel, I don't see a lot of fuel. And the computer will watch that for some period of time, or what we call heat cycles. The car warms up and then it cools down. Or it could simply be however many starts or in time. So at that particular point, you got an oxygen sensor screaming, but he's the messenger. So you go up front and you find out, there's a big vacuum hose off right here. You plug it in, you look at the oxygen sensor, and instead of yelling 111 all the time, or 555, it actually is 2.5. So it's right in the middle of the range. And think about a 1 through 5 range with 2.5 being in the middle. So that's kind of how it works. There's lots of codes out there that have nothing to do with really what ultimately fixes them. It's not uncommon for us to have all kinds of fuel starvation problems or the abundance of fuel. So the oxygen sensor screaming, ooh, way too much, and the computer tries to shut the faucet off, and then pretty soon the computer's got the faucet completely off, and it's still screaming, the O2 sensor's still screaming, you're showering fuel on me. Well, at that particular point, then you know to go look at the downside of the fuel delivery. So you have a pump in the tank that feeds the fuel injection system, and then we have this little device called a fuel pressure regulator. And if the pressure gauge drops too low, the fuel pressure regulator shuts the gate. So we build fuel pressure, and then it opens and meters the gate. Well, if that goes bad, then you have an unrestricted, unidentified, tremendous fuel supply to the engine. And so it's running real rough. Your gasoline, you know, mileage went crazy down. And you have a check engine light, and it says oxygen sensor. And really, you have to replace the fuel pressure regulator. I'm not here to sell you on all this stuff. I'm here to give you good advice that's going to save you money. What happens that shouldn't happen is the wife comes in and parrots what the husband said to say. That's kind of the worst case scenario. You're getting it secondhand. She doesn't drive the car. She's bringing it in. And the shop really does have a responsibility to call the husband and say, let's talk symptoms. What is it you're hoping to fix? And what they don't want to hear is, well, I got on YouTube and I got on the internet and I did this and I did that and I did this. And then I say at the end, so pretty much you spent a whole lot of money and you haven't fixed anything that you want to fix. So why didn't you just spend $100, $150 to have somebody diagnose it? And then you look them in the eye and you say, hey, are we guessing with your money or my money? Because I need to know your diagnosis is 100%. And then go home and fix it yourself. But if it doesn't work, or if the part's dead, or if there's another symptom, historically the customer comes back and says, you gave me something. And then the shop has an obligation to diagnose another problem in order to prove that they didn't have anything to do with it. So those are the kinds of things, and I'm not sticking up for shops, and I'm not sticking up for customers. but I think both of us have the opportunity to be better. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. We have five. Gil is the pilot that pilots this plane, although he has no control of me in the very back of the plane because there's 10 doors between him and I, and he's not allowed through 9 of them. And so when you call 602-508-0960, Gil's going to be the one that takes your call, and he'll ask you your name, and he'll put you in queue. This portion of Unhood is brought to you by Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing in Mesa. Been around since 1970. Brian and Thelma owned and operate Thompson's Auto Repair. You only have to meet them before you really know why they're such good people. They know the difference between right and wrong. They have ASC-certified technicians. They follow up with friendly reminders that your vehicle may be due for this service if your mileage is about here. And those are kind of nice because you can decide. And it's important for you to know your owner's manual and specifically the maintenance part of it. So remember, Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing is on Main Street just east of Stapley. Main Street just east of Stapley. And they're a good shop for you to go in. Unfortunately, they're the best shop in Mesa that I could find. Many have applied, but unfortunately, they didn't have the 5 years, they didn't have the insurance, they didn't have the reputation, stuff like that. So I am the one that vets the shops, and I assure you I'm doing a good job. You know, I also say to you, if you have a complaint, then I'll guide you through a dispute resolution process. And at the end of the dispute resolution process, whether it's an arbitrator, mediator, whatever, then if the shop says no, they're told to write a check, they're told to fix the car, the whatever. If the shop says no, then I'll do that up to $5,000. So if they say the shop needs to spend $220 to fix this and the shop says nope, I'll pay it, I'll fix it, but I'm going to kick the shop off. So to be perfectly honest with you, since 1988, that has never happened. Now, it's true that I've removed a couple of shops for behavioral issues and stuff that I found pretty concerning, but I've never paid a dime since 1988, and that should tell you about the quality of the shops that I recommend to you. I've been in this business a really long time, and I can tell you that the front counter give and take is so important. And that's why it's difficult when the wife comes and regurgitates what the husband said. Ladies, we know you're in a bad position under those circumstances, unless, of course, you say, can I walk out to the car with you? Yes, ma'am. There's an oil leak right here across the front of the car. It drips straight below there. Whew. We never get that. So we walk around the back of the car, and there's no oil spots all over the back of the trunk. So we know it's not a real severe leak. So we put it up on the rack. We know exactly in the area it is, and there's a power steering hose. And they say red fluid, and it's red fluid. Or they say it's clear fluid, and it's clear fluid. So we know exactly where the leak is at. You see, because many times, even my own shop, we will fix an oil leak, but we don't fix the right oil leak because nobody asks. There's a lot of times that we replace something and fix something that wasn't really what they wanted fixing, and vibrations are a big part of that. So the shop has to be dead on, and it has to convince you that they're not guessing with your money. This is all called self-defense for car expense. It's a matter of trying to educate the public on how to better interface with our auto repair facility. Now, that includes dealerships, that includes chain, auto repair chain, that includes independents, that includes the travel guys, all that kind of stuff. There's no way that you can properly bid a job unless you have specific information. Now, if somebody calls and says, I have an 80 or 96 Grand Caravan, and it's not running well, how much is a set of spark plugs? If the shop's on their toes, and I've been in business 39 years, the shop says, we'll put plugs in it if you want, but there's no guarantee we're going to fix the problem because you obviously have diagnosed it. Oh, no, it's just due. Fair enough. We're going to write it on the work order. It's just due. R&R spark plugs. But if they come in and say, I want you to put spark plugs in it, and you say, well, tell me what symptom we're trying to fix, and they say, no, I got this, then you just have them sign the work order and say, I've dictated exactly what I want, and the success of this repair depends on my ability to diagnose it, and I won't hold the shop responsible, because that happens. We're told to do a repair, and then the conversation afterwards, well, you didn't fix this. And we say, we don't know anything to fix. You represented this as just something you wanted done. We never had an opportunity to diagnose the problem. We just did what you did. You said to do. Replace the mass airflow sensor, $400, something like that. Okay, we got a caller. Who might that be, Gil?
That would be Chris.
Chris, good morning to you.
Good morning, Mark. And I appreciate what you led off with about that. I had no idea that you did what you said you do, you know. I'm even more impressed that you haven't had to pay out, you know. So you obviously vet your advertisers very, very well.
Yep.
You know?
We do.
I got maybe two questions, okay?
Okay.
One, it's a 95 Buick Century. I keep bringing this thing back to life. You know, I have to dig it out of the grave every once in a while.
But, uh-huh.
We did a lot of work through it this time.
One minute.
It was sucking transmission fluid out of the transmission, pumping it into the engine. Got that all fixed up. And we found out that the fuel pump was bad, so we did the fuel pump. And what's going on is quite interesting. The other day, I was on Route 10, and I'm headed back towards home in Peoria, and I had to step on my brakes a little harder than I normally do, but the traffic was terrible, and the car stalled. Vroom. Oh, wow, what the heck just happened? The lights came on, and I had no more juice. So I sat there for a minute, put my flashers on, and tried to start it again, and it started up. So I go to take off, and the next stop, it does the same thing.
Okay, we got to get to the end of this symptom. I mean, what are we trying to fix?
Okay, so my conclusion is...
No. All I've got is when you come up to a stop, the engine dies. And I thought you were calling me to ask me my opinion on what it might be.
You got me.
Okay.
I apologize.
All right. Well, let me ask you a question. If it's got a bad brake booster, and it could easily be a bad brake booster, then if you're sitting in your car and it's warm and the car's idling fine and you push the brake, normal or a little hard, and then you detect the car going from and then it goes da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, and then you let go of the brake, boom, it's okay. So that could be one of them, and you can test it just like I said. You could also have an EGR problem. The EGR valve is supposed to close when you come to an idle, and if it sticks open, then it creates a huge vacuum leak and causes the car to die. I noticed what you said was you came to a stop, and the car started up immediately. I was thinking to myself, he just put a fuel pump in that. I wonder if we got a leak that he created. But you said it started up immediately. If you screwed up the fuel pump installation, then you would have had to crank it for an exceptional amount of time until it fired up. So I'm listening to you, and that's what I'm thinking. So with respect to that, I think, and that's all I got to guess. But when we come back, I'll take your second question. I think there's a second car, and we'll do that. Anybody else? 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. Let's talk. Well, welcome back, everybody. The most important part of this conversation is you know, symptoms. And let me tell you about another shop, and then we're going to go back to Chris because he has a second call, and if we have four lines open. So if you'd like to join us, it's easy. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. Blackwell Auto covers for me the northeast portion of Scottsdale. He's at 40th and Greenway. I've known Tom for more than 20 years. He's a really good technician. He's got some technicians that can work on the old cars as well as the new cars. He's got a staff that he's had for years and years and years. And he's one of those clones. We're clones of one another, or we're brothers with different mothers. And that meaning we're both alike. We both know right for wrong, and we're pretty good at just knowing when our staff doesn't tell us the truth or they can't answer the question. So if you're interested in a good shop, you know, have one, 40th Street and Greenway, Tom Blackwell Auto. It's called Blackwell Auto. Chris, let's try that second thing. What you got on that?
Yeah, am I coming in better now?
Yeah, just speak up, and then that's better already.
Okay, good. Just so I can put this other issue to bed, it always happened when it was under a half a tank but just above a quarter, and that's when it would conk out.
Well, it doesn't make any difference to me. Because if you put the fuel pump in right and the sock is down in the bottom of the floor of the tank, then it's going to pick up all the way to E. So, you know, if you put a pump in it, and if this is a problem inside the tank, it's yours. So you didn't buy the right pump. It didn't stick. You didn't make sure that the pump sock went all the way to the floor of the tank. So it could be that, but here's the problem with that. You didn't say anything about 75 miles an hour, this thing dying. And so if we're sucking half air and suck half air and half fuel, then right, it's going to die. So let's move on to the second.
Okay, second is I put a different size tire, a higher diameter tire on this Buick. There was somebody had them for sale, all four of them, and I said that could work really well. They look good. They're practically brand new. It was like, you know, $75 for all four of them. I checked the dates on them. They look good. There was no cracking.
Okay, let's get to the...
Okay, does that change any of the dynamics of my engine RPMs or my fuel usage or anything like that? Would that have any effect on it, putting a larger tire on?
Yes, of course it does. The computer is not used to a larger tire. So your speed's going to be off. Your MPGs, as far as the car is figuring that out on your dashboard, that's going to be affected. I don't know what size you went from and you go to, but you can find somebody. I think Discount Tire can do that. You can go in and say, the sticker on my door says this is the size I have. I have these on there now. Is there any way you can give me some kind of a sheet that tells me what the balance is? My own truck has much bigger tires on it, and I know I'm 6% over. So if I round it to 10 at 70 miles an hour, I'm either doing 7 less or 7 more. And in my tires, I'm doing 7 more. So the circumference of the tire on the ground makes all the difference on your, and it doesn't make all the difference. It depends on how big the difference is. The idea is that it can create transmission shift issues. It can create engine codes because the computer looks at the fuel delivery and decides that we're going faster or slower than we should have, and the tire can create that problem. Anti-lock brakes, they expect one kind of tire with one kind of footprint. If you put slicks on all four corner, and I know you wouldn't, then that could create a problem on your ABS. It's not anything I know anybody's died from. It's not anything I'm afraid of. So if you said to my wife could use your car and go to Tucson, I'd have no problem with that. But yes, there's going to be a change. What you do is you just go in and get the circumference of both of them, divide that up, see what the difference is, either in miles per hour or in percentage, and then you'll have the answer. So, anyway, thanks very much, Chris. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. And we got another caller. Who could that be?
That would be David.
David, good morning.
Good morning.
How can I help you?
Hey, I got a comment about a caller from 2 weeks ago.
Okay.
He was talking about lag time when he stepped on the pedal.
Yeah.
I have a 2010 Camaro. It had that same problem when I bought it. Because I complained about it when I got it. And then what I ended up doing is putting a pedal commander on it, and my pedal response is quite a bit faster.
Okay. This guy said that he stomped the throttle, and there was a second or two or some uncontrollable, uncomfortable hesitation before it rocketed. Is that?
Yeah, it's lag time. I mean, I don't know why GM did that, but if you step on the pedal, it takes a minute for it to decide to catch up to you. But so I put a pedal commander in there, and then that problem went away.
Okay. I'm not familiar with this pattern failure. I'm not familiar with the pedal commander either, but I am familiar with lag time. I'm real familiar with lag time, especially in a diesel-powered vehicle, but in a gas as well. We can't open up the EGR until we develop some RPMs. If the EGR comes on open, there's lag. We also have a air control motor. And when you throttle up, the air control motor kind of goes out of the system, and it's metered air amount. So if it's open or closed, or it's dirty, or the passage is dirty, that can create lag time. A throttle position sensor that isn't adjusted properly. You have to adjust the throttle position sensor to a specific voltage and at the same time to a specific RPM. We have to synchronize those two guys. So I want to tell you, a lag problem hasn't gone through my shop in 10 years with the exception of diesels. And we do get some lag time, and basically it's a turbo that won't spool up fast enough. Now, I owned 2010 Camaros on the SS version, and I've sold all but one, and we put blowers on all of them, but none of them had a lag time, and they don't have a lag time now. So sometimes the symptom can be repaired with an adjustment or a cleaning of the air control motor or an EGR. A lot of times what we do is just disconnect the EGR, put a golf tee or a pencil in the vacuum line that services the EGR, and have the customer go drive it for 4 or 5 days, and if they come back and say, better, no lag, then you say, okay, well, I'll clean your EGR, or I'll replace your EGR. How many miles you got on it? Well, 200,000. EGR never been off? Yeah, I don't want to clean it. I want to put a new one in. Or, I got 60,000 miles. Well, let me clean it. Let's see how that goes. So that's kind of the conversation, but the most important part is you fixed it. So if you're happy with it, I'm not going to argue with your process or your decisions. I'm grateful that you got it done, and I think it's admirable that you recognized what you had and you found something that would fix it. So that's good. There's Dodges out there right now, and it's the EcoDiesel motor, and they have a Dodge got in trouble, like VW did, because their software allowed their cars to run a little faster, but the emissions were a little past the limit. So the VW people got in a lot of trouble for that. And millions of dollars worth of trouble. And Dodge did the same thing with this EcoBoost. So I'll tell you, we took an EcoBoost to the dealer, and the dealer flashed the computer, put new software in the computer. Here's the deal. When you do that, you rearrange everything in there. Well, come to find out, this new software, version 9, is defective in half of the cars or more. And it creates turbo lag time, and it creates all kinds of problems. But you can't back up to version 8. So you have to wait till Chrysler comes up with a fix, and that could be how long. So, and that's a turbo lag issue as well. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960, the lines are wide open. Well, it was 34 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock, or 10 o'clock, I'm sorry, 10:34. My name is Mark Salem, and we're here till 12 o'clock talking about cars. You're welcome to join us. Two lines are tied up right now, but we've got three open, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Real quick, Automatic Transmission Exchange has been rebuilding the transmissions and fixing transmissions and fixing leaks in transmissions since 1968. Phil is an experienced guy. He was around when Fred Flintstone had a transmission, and now he's got all these electronics that do everything by electricity. We shift your car by opening and closing an electrical solenoid. Phil knows all that stuff. So if you have a leak, if you have a shift problem, or you have any kind of transmission problem, he'll send one of his guys with you, and he'll drive your car. But you just can't have the technician for an hour. So that's Automatic Transmission, 40th Street in Washington on the north side of the road. Let's go to the callers. And, Ralph, you're up first. How can I help you?
Good morning, Mark.
Good morning.
I have a Lexus LS430 2002. And the shop I take it to, it seems to do pretty good all the time. But I just had the control arms replaced or repaired, whatever they do to them.
Okay.
And when I do a tight right turn, I hear a clunk, a bang. To me, it's like two pieces of steel coming together, snapping or something.
What were the symptoms? Did you tell them to do the control arm bushings, or is that something that they called you and said, hey, you need these?
They told me that they diagnosed, or that was, they were bad.
Okay, had you given them that direction that I want you to check this clunking or this metal-to-metal noise?
Yes. After they changed them, I went back a couple of times because the first time you couldn't find anything. The second time, oh, I found these bolts was loose, blah, blah, blah. They corrected it, and it did it again.
So today we still have the problem.
Yeah.
Okay. We need another pair of eyes. And if you were at my shop, I'd say the same thing. We just need a fresh pair of eyes. And we need you to work really hard on determining what can you do to make this happen 50 or 75% of the time. And maybe you're turning right into your driveway and you get the metal-to-metal stuff. Then hit the brakes and continue with your throttle, but gently apply the brakes. Does it change? I'm not going to disparage your shop. I'm going to talk about all shops in general. But lower control arms and lower control arm bushings is a very profitable business. And there's a whole lot of folks that are told they need that work. But here's the problem. The problem is there are specific symptoms when we lose the bushings. There's a clunk when you take off, and there's a clunk when you stop, and you can feel it in the steering wheel. And the faster you stop and the faster you take off, the more the clunk is. And it's in the front end. Those are lower control arm bushings. I'm not a fan of people looking at them and say, oh, they're cracked, they're old. Because it's cracked, it's weathered, it looks bad, it's missing a piece, it's squished too much. All of those are adjectives that just aggravate the heck out of me. If there is a knock when you take off or stop rapidly, then I'm not into that. I don't like the idea of using the words weathered and cracked. That bothers me because the tires are weathered and cracked and nobody's replacing those. So I think we need a fresh pair of eyes. What part of town do you live in?
East Mesa.
Okay. Is Thompson on your radar screen somewhere around Apache and Stapley?
Yeah, I'm at Higley and Kellett.
Okay. That's the best I can offer you, Apache and Stapley. I think you go in and I think you say, hey, Brian, or Thelma, I've had some lower control arm bushings installed, and now I have a problem that apparently today they gave me during the installation of these lower control arms or lower control arm bushings. And they can't find it, so I've decided to try somebody new. And can you give me a range of the diagnostic process? $20 to $50, he might say. $20 to $75, $20 on the low. If we pick it up and it makes a noise, or we turn the steering wheel and the front tires are off the ground and it makes a noise, then it's going to probably be related to the pivots on top of the front struts. And they would have moved those around when they did the lower control arms. So it could have been that it's come apart, but it could be damaged. So those are the kinds of concerns that you have to walk carefully. But the most important statement is you gave me this problem and you've tried three times. And so I'm going to go get a fresh pair of eyes. And before I authorize anything, I'll call you. And, you know, that I think that's what makes a good customer. And a lot of times I would say, no, you have it fixed and I'll trust you. If it's gone, then come on back, bring your receipt, and you and I are going to work it out.
So. Yeah, and he warranties his parts and labor for lifetime, so I'm good with that.
Okay.
But I don't like the noise.
Yeah, yeah. I don't have any vendors that are going to do that for me. I think it's a roll of the dice for a shop to do that. It's not my call. I typically give whatever the manufacturer gives. So if it's a year and 12 or 15,000 miles, and a lot of times if you already have 20 work orders in my software and you've got a problem, it's 14 months, I'm going to call the vendor and say, hey, I haven't used a favor for a long time. Can I get another alternator? This is 2 months out of warranty. And he goes, what are you coming to the party with? And I say, I'm going to do the labor for free. So if you give me the part, I'm going to do the labor, because it's not fair to them. I say, I want you to give the part, and then I charge labor again. That's not fair to him. So that's kind of how it works, but I think you'll get this fixed. You just need a fresh pair of eyes.
And what was the name of their shop?
Thompson's. Brian? Thompson's, yeah. Brian and Thelma own it.
Thompson's.
Yeah.
Okay, well, thank you for your ears.
You're welcome. You're welcome. We're going to take a quick break. Tom, you don't go anywhere because we'll be back in about 3 minutes. Anybody else? 602-508-0960. We're going to be here for the next hour as well, but now's the time to get in. We'll be right back. 43 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem, and we've got a lot of callers, but quickly let me tell you about Action Auto Repair I-17 in Deer Valley. I've known Tom since early 80s. He opened up his shop in 1983. I respected his car ability in 1980. He just had the skills and had the knowledge of how a car works. And at that time, he was selling these big boxes that everybody used to say, let's put it on the scope. Well, he had one, but the one I bought was one of his competitors, and he never let me forget that, but we've become best friends, and he's a good guy. So he's been there for a long time, and he's married, and he's just a good guy. So if you're anywhere near I-17 I-17 in Deer Valley, and you don't have a garage, stop by Tom's and get an oil change, or call him and get an oil change. Tom, you're up first. How can I help you?
Morning, Mark. How you doing?
I'm good.
Good, good. I've got a 2017 Accord. It's got the four-cylinder, the K24. The Honda calls for a 172-degree thermostat. So I notice now that the weather's I go to work probably 60, 65. My oil temperature is only getting like 170, 175. I feel like that's not hot enough. What do you think?
I don't like the fact that it's 170. I always state that the engine coolant and the engine oil should be pretty close to one another, as my truck is. And I've tested my wife's and a lot of other cars as well. So, but are you absolutely sure it's a 170?
Yeah, I was surprised. I'd done a lot of, well, I'd looked on the internet to see if it was just me. And
okay.
Then, you know, I looked in the application and then looked in the Honda and I thought, 172 is cold.
Okay. Here's the deal. It's going to open at 170, but here's the problem with that. In the old days, we had these 180 thermostats. Well, the motor never got to 212 where we could boil off the water. So every time you shut it off, it makes a tablespoon of water. So that turns into sludge, and that's all we had in the 70s and the 80s. So in the 90s, they came out with these thermostats that make the car run at 220. 195 is the most popular. Well, at 220, we're boiling the water off because 212 turns the water liquid to a vapor. PCV valve sucks it out the tailpipe. So I'm real concerned with your oil temperature and your engine temperature because I think it's going to be too low, and I think you're going to have sludge, and I think you're not going to like that. So if I were you, this is what I would do. I'd cut a piece of cardboard that would cover the bottom third of my radiator. And I would go drive it. Now, here's the deal. We want everybody to run at 3/4 gauge. You're probably half or less right now?
I've got a temperature gauge in the upper radiator home.
Okay, okay. That, now, is this one you installed?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Why did you install the auxiliary temperature gauge?
I just wanted to know what it was because I just see a lot of leeway, a lot of room for error with a mechanical gauge.
Okay. I think what you should do is not rely on that, because I wouldn't rely on that at all. Go to Harbor Freight and buy yourself a temperature gun.
Okay.
And gun the top hose, because that's where hot water's coming out into the radiator, and then gun the bottom hose and see what it is. We should lose 10 to 20 degrees in that transition. As the water comes in the top, then as it travels through the radiator and gets sucked out the bottom, we're going to dissipate the heat. You might find out that if you hit the thermostat housing or the metal part that's attached to the upper hose from the engine, you might find out you might be in the 200, 220 range. As long as you're there, that's fine. But I'm not going to hang my hat on a thermometer that's tucked in behind a hose and clamped on there, because historically we have found they haven't been very dependable and they usually don't last very long. So another thing you can do is just look at your gauge. The middle should be somewhere around 190, and the 3/4 mark should about be 230 approximately, and you want to ride kind of in the middle between the top or the middle mark and the 3/4 mark. That's kind of where you want. So anyway.
Okay. The, another part of the question. My, in doing my reading, that the direct injection, high compression, and they're afraid of the knocking. Is that why they would recommend a low temperature thermostat? I'm like you. 195 is a magic number.
No, 195 is my magic number. If you were my brother, and I do love my brother, I'd tell him the same thing. With respect to it, the heat has really nothing to do with knocking. That's timing. So, and your motor probably doesn't even have a distributor. So the computer's going to advance and retard the timing, and it does it faster than the blink of an eye. And here's how it does it. It's looking around, and the knock sensor is real quiet. Then all of a sudden, the knock sensor goes, hey, hey, hey. And the computer says to the distributor, or to the ignition, back off a degree. And then the knock sensor says, hey, hey, hey. And he goes, go another degree. And then pretty soon it's, hey, 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 or the hey, hey, hey's gone. And the computer goes, okay, I needed to retard 2 degrees to get the knocking done. Now, a bad power steering bracket can create a knock. And then the knock is interpreted by the computer as a ping. The computer starts to retard the timing, and pretty soon you lose power. But the computer's trying to control that knock. It thinks the engine has pre-ignition. It's knocking, but really the power steering bracket's broken. So that's how difficult it is sometimes to diagnose it. But to answer your question, the fact that it's 170, would typically, 90% of the time, it's going to be timing and not engine heat that causes it to rattle. So I got to go. Thank you very much, Tom. JD, you're up next. JD,
I'm here.
Go ahead.
I'm here.
Okay, I'm here too.
Thanks for taking my call, Mark. Listen, yesterday I acquired a 1996 Dodge Ram 360 four-wheel drive, and it wants to overheat when you turn your air conditioner on.
Okay.
But if you don't turn the air conditioner on and go out on the freeway, it won't run hot enough.
Okay.
And so it's looking to me like perhaps somebody removed the thermostat.
No. Let me regurgitate what you said. When I'm at lower speed, city driving, and I turn on the air conditioning, my temperature climbs. But Mark, when I get on the highway, I turn on the air and hardly nothing happens. Is that correct?
No, I didn't leave the air on the highway.
You don't leave the air on?
Well, I was afraid, actually. I just got the thing, so I didn't know if I was going to get from A to B.
Okay, well, if that's the case, you have a bad fan clutch. Think about it. When you're driving around the city, we're pushing air through the radiator, but it's doing it at 30 miles an hour. When you're on the freeway, you're doing 75, 80, or like 90, like my wife. We're shoving air through the radiator.
Right.
So if you have a temperature, a significant temperature difference between low speed and high speed, and I know that 360's got a fan clutch on it, I think that's where you start. But the thermostat in that vehicle should be a 195.
Okay, and one other little tidbit here. The radiator, the fan clutch, the hoses all look brand new on this thing.
Okay, I know, but I used to put a fan clutch on my dad's truck, and he lived in Douglas, and about every time he came to Phoenix, I had to put a fan clutch on it. And so I tried a different one. I still had the problem. I was just getting ready to give up and buy the truck for my dad. And I read from a friend of mine who had written a paper that you need to look at this fan clutch because this is the company that makes all the rest of them. So you're going right to the guy that makes it. So I put that on there. I never did another one for my dad. So
all right. I'm 2 blocks from Thompson.
Okay.
So.
And it's... He'll know if the fan clutch is the problem. I promise you, he'll know. There's certain way. Let me ask you another question. When you're driving down the freeway, does it sound like the fan clutch is locked up and there's a hell of a lot of air being moved underneath your hood or not?
I don't hear that, but it does have some duals on it, so it does purr pretty well. So
okay.
I don't know if I'd be able to hear that.
Okay, good enough. Yes, no, and I don't know are three acceptable questions. So thank you, JD. Thank you very much, Dan. You're up next. How can I help you?
I have a 2005 Honda Element,
and
the starter it spins. But it doesn't appear to engage the gear. And at first I checked the usual stuff, the battery and all that.
It's not any of that.
The batteries.
It's not any of that. Let me ask you a question. Does it change when the engine's hot and cold?
Well, I haven't been able to get the thing started since. The only way would be to push start, and I haven't gotten to that point yet.
All right. Well, it's clicking and the motor's spinning, but the spinning motor isn't got teeth contact with the flywheel. And
correct.
So here's what I want you to do. Do you know where the starter is?
Yes.
Follow the positive cable to the starter. I want your wife to get in, and I want you say, try it, honey. And she does it, and it spins. And you say, okay, stop, and you hit it with a hammer. And then you go ahead, honey. And you do that 3 times. Bet the thing starts. Go get yourself a new starter.
Okay.
That's
because I I'm glad you told me that to rule it out, because it's incredibly difficult to get the starter out.
I know. I know. And don't, if you're going to do it, don't buy one without a solenoid. You want a starter solenoid package. Denso and Hitachi make really good starters for domestic cars as well. So it's not uncommon for me to put a Denso or a Hitachi starter in somebody's car, because if my wife needed a starter, she'd get the same doggone one. So that's what I'd do if I were you. And if you hit it and it starts, it's possible that you got the drive to go further, or the brushes in the back, or you got a heck of a wobble on the shaft and it's worn. How many miles are on your element first?
It's fairly low miles. It only has about 75,000 on it.
Okay, but in reality, it's an 05, so it's what, 14 years old?
Yeah.
Okay. You've identified this starter problem. This is not a battery problem. This has nothing to do with that. But you could go to MarkSalem.com. I'll get it right. MarkSalem.com and look at FAQ 27 or 28, and it will help you diagnose your problem. You watch the headlights, and the wife tries to start it. And so, do they go from really bright to nothing? Do they go really bright to dim? Or do they change at all? You're looking at the headlights, and it will help you understand. But I don't think this is a voltage problem. You got the starter drive running. So I don't think it's a voltage problem at all. But anyway, thank you very much. That was a good question, Dan. I think I can squeeze. David, you're up next. I think I can get you in.
Hello, Mark.
Hi.
I have a 2012 Toyota Tacoma. 70,000 miles or 74,000 miles. I just bought it like 3 weeks ago.
Uh-huh.
And it was pinging and puttering, and I took it into S&S Tire to have it evaluated.
Uh-huh.
And it told me it had a revision notice on it.
Okay.
And I called where I bought it from the dealership, and they say they didn't find nothing when they serviced it before they sold it. And that I told them that it was where the problem was, and there was a reprogram EMC.
Uh-huh.
And here on the paperwork that they gave me with SMS tires, it was covered under applicable warranty under Toyota Federal Emissions Warranty.
Okay.
I was wondering if Toyota dealership has to do that, or can I take that to another service pack?
You're far better off to have that done at the dealer for record reasons. But I would approach it this way. I would call the dealer and ask to talk to service and get the service rider's name and say, I have these specific symptoms for my Tacoma, and I've been looking around and I found this bulletin that talks exactly about my symptoms. So I'd like to bring it in, and I'll hand you a copy of the bulletin, and I want to know what's the minimum amount of diagnostic or labor I'm faced with. Give me a very small range. Because here's the deal. They look at the paperwork, they look at the VIN, bingo, 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 and at this point it's their dime. So they should be able to do that real quick and determine. Now, it costs $128 for me to go to the cloud. They get it for free, but they pay a lot of money to get it for free. So I'm going to hook your car up. I'm going to go to the cloud, and I'm going to say, hey, cloud, look. And I'm going to go to the Toyota website up in the cloud, and I'm going to say, hey, take a look at this and see if there's any updates. And the cloud goes, no, but I've got one version better than you have. Oh, perfect. And so he downloads the version. I'm paying $128 for it, but I've also got a technician tied up for 45 minutes. And so they download that. We go drive it. Bingo, bango, we're done. And then you come in. But in your particular case, yours is new enough. It's a 12 that it's not under emissions warranty anymore, but I would certainly be pleasantly firm about this is a problem that you created. I'd like you to fix it. That's what I would do. All righty?
Okay. So one quick question. So that the 96 month and the 80,000 mile, that's just a general
1 minute
mileage and month, so it could vary depending on the car.
Okay.
There's no guarantee that it's covered under that warranty?
Well, you have to find out. You have to read the contract, and you have to have a firm diagnosis. Those two, before you can contact the aftermarket warranty or the Toyota place. And I just think it's always best to start with a diagnosis. and then decide where we're going. Because the diagnosis may say that the scuculator valve's bad, and when you look at the contract, the scuculator valve's not a covered item. And so at that particular point, if you want it fixed, you're going to pay for it yourself. On the other hand, if the scuculator valve's listed, then we call your aftermarket warranty company or whatever, and we negotiate with them. We tell them what we did and what we didn't do. I got to go, David. Thank you very much. 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. 602-508-0960. And we'll be back in about 3 minutes. Well, good afternoon, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. My name's Mark Salem, and we've got a full board, well, almost a full board. We got two lines open, but I got to tell you real quick about Larry Harker's Auto Repair. All of you understand that you'd like to go to the gray-haired doctor who's been around the block, and maybe he was a brain surgeon, and he did pulmonary stuff, and then he fixed and replaced knees, and he did this well-rounded doctor, and everybody knew he was good. Well, you're talking about Larry Harker's Auto at 35th Avenue and Indian School. Bob there and his son-in-law, between the two of them, they really have the knowledge that 10, maybe 12 techs might have. They're just really good at what they do. Now, Larry Harker's does oil changes and brake jobs and all that kind of stuff. But if you've got a problem with a car that nobody else can fix, when you honk the horn, when you go to honk the horn, it quacks, they're going to be able to find that. Or if they can duplicate the problem, I got to put that caveat in there. If they can duplicate the problem, almost always, 99% of the time, they can find it and fix it. So Larry Harker's Auto, 38th Avenue and Indian School, I'm really proud to have them on my list. Let's go to the phones real quick, and we're going to start with Jim. Jim, go ahead.
Hey, Mark, I have a question. I have a 2016 Chevy Silverado 2500 with Duramax in it.
Okay.
We were up in Flagstaff, and check engine came on. So once we get back down to the valley, I wanted to take it to what diesel shop that you suggest.
Okay.
And it turned out to be the DEF reservoir, which would be under warranty. But they had like a laundry list of stuff that they said my truck needed. I mean, like the oil change they said they wanted to do, but my gauge over the computer says I have 40% left of oil life. Then they wanted to do the pitman arm. They said excessive play in that and excessive play in my idler arm. And they wanted to change the differential and both the front and the back differential fluid.
Okay, how many miles has this got on it?
47,000.
40.
And when I took it back.
Wait a minute.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
47,000?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
And I did not take it four-wheeling.
Okay.
Never seen. So, but anyway, I took it back to the dealership because it was under warranty. And I told them to check everything out. And they said, no, you don't need the oil change because you still have 40% left. No, your pitman arm is fine. Same thing with your idler arm. So one shop says it's good, one shop says it's bad. So what is your take like on the oil change?
Well, first of all, I don't go by the percentage. I go by miles. So on my diesel, I go 10,000 miles, and I don't care what that thing means. It's software that says, what temperature is it? How fast are you going? Oh, that means this and this and this. I drive kind of like an idiot sometimes. So I just look at the odometer, I put a door sticker in there, and I go 10,000 miles. It really depends on the time. So I don't know how long it's taking you to rack up 40%. I don't know that, but I don't even watch that.
We don't drive it much.
Okay. Number two. It's unfortunate that, and I know you, I'm not blaming you. It's unfortunate you didn't say, take me back in the shop and show me what you're talking about. You can't imagine how most of us just embrace that idea. So we take you back in the shop and we put the car up on the hoist and we have a guy in there, and as he wiggles the steering wheel back and forth about 5 or 6 inches, you can see this joint just wiggling. The top part is, but the bottom part's not. And you go, oh. Then you look at the tie rod end, or you look at this, or you look at that. They should demonstrate that stuff. Now, I'm going to teach you how to do it. You got a wife that still loves you?
What was that?
No. Do you have a wife, and does she still love you? Because you're going to lay in front of the car when it's running, okay? So you're going to lay in front of the car, and you're going to stretch your hands out, and you're going to hold on to both front wheels. And you're going to close your eyes, and then you're going to have your wife take her fist from 12 o'clock and go about 4 inches to the right and call it right, stop, center, left, stop, center. That makes sense?
Yeah, it makes sense, yes.
Both of those front tires should move in complete synchronization. if we got a little play in the pitman arm, we got a little play in the center link, we got a little play on one of the tie rod ends, you'll be able to feel it. And so one will just move a little before the other. So in for future reference, you just say, can you show me the test you did? Because if it was off the hoist, I'd just have somebody take back and say, here, he's going to lay underneath with you, and I'm going to have another technician wiggle the steering wheel, and you can see for yourself. And here, even more important than that, Jim, when I get done, we're going to do it in front of you again, and you'll see that the play is gone. and that's what I would do. Okay?
Sounds good.
Okay.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. Steve, you're up next. How can I help you?
Hi, Mark.
Hi.
Enjoy your show.
Thank you.
Question for you. I have a 2013 Ford Escape.
Okay.
And I have an issue with the air conditioner. Now, this problem usually happens on longer trips.
Okay.
Of course, in the summertime. It stops blowing. The fan will stop blowing. It blows, and you can hear that the fan is working fine, but the air out of the vents is not coming out very strong, and it starts to get hot. And the air inside starts to get hot. It doesn't keep cold enough. And then what I've noticed is we have to shut it off for a while, and it's almost like something freezes up if there's a condenser or something underneath the car.
Okay.
It just leaks a tremendous amount of water, and then once that happens, after 15 minutes of that, we can turn it back on. And
okay, you've given me all I need. You've given me all I need. You're freezing up the evaporator behind the glove box. And the reason for that is either you and your wife are really cold, and so somebody turns the fan blower down to low, and then you're also in recirculatory, so we're going to take cold air off the floor where your wife's stinky feet are, and we're going to run it up through this cool radiator, and we're going to create all this ice. So, two things. Number one, go to outside air, which is normal. That warm air will come from the grate in front of the windshield, and it's going to kind of keep the ice away from the evaporator. Number two, you got to kick up the fan speed. So if somebody gets cold, just shut their vents off. But you're freezing, freezing up the evaporator, and there's where all the water is. And once you melt this ice cube, then everything works well.
Right.
You're just going. The blower speed is low, and you're on maximum air. I can almost guarantee you. How close am I?
I think you're right, because I tried a bunch of different things, and one of the things I told my wife was to keep the fan up higher and don't put it down so low. And I thought it seemed to work, but we haven't used it enough to know if that solved our problem.
Okay, so, another thing, too, is if you got to run two and three, just have her redirect the vents and roll the window up and down to get comfortable. But if I have an ice cube in front of you and I blow like this, you know, like I'm not even blowing out a match. If I'm blowing like this and you start circulating Freon through that evaporator, boom, we got ice. And you've done a great job talking about it spits water on the ground, because it's guaranteed. So if we want to blow a big amount of air through this condenser, that's this little radiator that might be 10 inches wide and probably 6 inches tall, if you blow a big bunch of fan on it, it's never going to freeze up. So inside air, recirculatory, is and you're going to take cold air and put it on top of cold air and on top of cold air. But if you go to normal, which is outside air, then you can use the windows and the vents and the fan speed to control the comfort zone. But it's like a swamp cooler in the sense that you got to have a window down in normal in order, because it's going to blow into the cab, but it's got nowhere to go. So you got to drop a window. Drop one of the back windows. And if I'm right,
gotcha.
Next time they pass the plate, put in an extra couple bucks. Roger?
There you go. Okay, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Bill, you're up next. How can I help you?
Oh, Mark, thank you for taking my call. I just recently bought a used 2013 Datsun. It's got 77,000 miles on it.
Datsun?
And, pardon?
What kind of car is it?
A Datsun.
D-A-T.
I'm sorry. The Honda.
Okay.
I have that habit. I've been calling it a Datsun, and I know I'm driving a Honda steering wheel.
Okay. I haven't seen a Datsun in a while, but I'm okay. Go ahead.
I used to own a Datsun a long time ago. But anyhow, I don't have a problem with the car right now, but I live about 23rd Avenue in Cactus, and I'd like to know some good service place to take it to get the oil changed and get the car serviced.
28th Avenue?
No, 23rd Avenue in Cactus.
Okay. I probably go to Action over at I-17 and go up a couple of miles. He's on Deer Valley. He's close. I really don't have anybody in your area, but where do you normally go? Do you go to, like, Fountain Hills or North Scottsdale?
I got rid of a 92 Buick with 155,000 miles on it that I had a neighborhood garage tree mechanic looking after, so I don't really have anybody.
Okay. You know, Harker's, 38th Avenue and Indian School. And
what's their name again, please?
Harker's, H-A-R-K-E-R-S. And when you go in there, you say, I have a $5 off coupon that's from Mark Salem, and then Bob will call me, and he'll cuss me out, and we'll both laugh and see who can talk the dirtiest to one another. So just tell him that. And if he says, okay, you just say, just put $5 credit on there. I'm going to send him a copy of the bill, and he's going to send me $5 because I will. So I got a call the other day because I said that a couple of weeks ago. And I had a call the other day. I think it was from Kurtz, and he goes, did you give somebody a $20 off coupon? And I said, yeah. I told him on the air I'd pay the first $20. I said, did you fix the car? And he goes, yeah. He says, you want me just to give him a discount? And I says, no, give him a discount and I'll send you a $20 bill. So I took a fake $20 bill and I cut it into a million pieces. But it looked real, and I put it in an envelope and I sent it to Kurt, and he calls back, and then he used bad words. But anyway.
You're bad.
Yeah. Okay.
And Harker's, H-A-R-K-E-R?
K-E-R-S, Harker's.
K-E-R-S.
Yeah, okay. And you're going to talk to his wife. And then you're going to talk to Bob. And so Bob's the shop foreman, and Ellen takes care of the front counter. So it's a good family operation, okay?
And you said something about Action. That was someplace else.
Yeah, that's...
Action's out of Deer Valley, right?
Yeah, it's Deer Valley Road and I-17. And you're at 23rd Avenue, so you're not too far from I-17. I don't know how far north or south Deer Valley is from Cactus. I don't know the answer to that.
Yeah, it's about 5 miles.
Okay. Alrighty, you're probably closer to Action. Anyway, thank you very much, Bill. I appreciate your call. We talked about Kurtz just a minute ago, and Kurtz has been in business for a long time, but I'll tell you what I like about Kurtz. He's a master tech, Eric's a master tech, and Jeff is a master tech, and they're all related. One of them's a son-in-law, one of them's the son, and then Kurtz the old man. But when you put these three guys together, you have three brain surgeons together, and it's not very often that somebody's able to stump them. The best part is listening to the stories about who was really right and who was out in left field. They're good-natured story, but they work together. And they've got ladies in the shop that command a lot of attention as well. So if you're anywhere near I-17 in Bell, Kurtz Auto is a good place. I'll tell you real quick a story. A lady said that she had been told by three different shops she needed an engine. I said, where you at? She says, done. I said, well, Kurtz is close to you. Go talk to him. I says, when you drive it, does any gauges come on? No. When you drive it, does it clatter? No. Okay. So she goes into Kurtz, and he says, what's the deal? And she says, well, my oil gauge is fluctuating, and so-and-so, Ted, I need a new motor. Kurt put a $35 oil pressure switch in it, sent her on her way. I think her total bill was $55. She calls me and she says, I don't need an engine and everything's fine. What did he do? I said, I don't know. But anyway, an oil pressure switch versus an engine. You can take your pick on about any of my shops, but Kurtz is a good guy. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. You're going to talk to Gil. We just got him out of the insane asylum, and he's really doing a good job because up until, no, not at all today, we haven't crashed, and he hasn't shut my mic off either. So Gil will answer the call. Say hi. Ask him how Van Buren, his office at Van Buren is. We'll be back. Twenty-one minutes after 11 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem. You're always welcome to join us if you want. 602-508-0960. Paul, I'm going to get to you in about 30 seconds. Strictly Diesel and Repair is up at I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road. Nate owns it. He does all the light-duty domestic trucks, both foreign and domestic. So he doesn't do the big trucks, but the half-ton eco-diesels and then the small six cylinders all the way up to that 6.7 on Dodges and Fords. So he knows a lot about diesels. And there's not a lot of shops here in town that focus just on diesel. But if you have a Honda or a Chevrolet and you need some other work on it, he does that. But diesels is his real focus. So if you've got a problem with your diesel, like it doesn't start hot or doesn't start cold or it doesn't crank hot or cold, then that's the difference, cranking and starting. Cranking is, yeah, it doesn't do that. But starting, it's, and it doesn't ever catch. So you have to always make that distinction. Strictly Diesel, I-17 in Pinnacle Peak in North Phoenix. Paul, thank you for waiting. How can I help you?
Okay, I've got a 2006 Infiniti M35. That's overheating, and it overheats right away, you know, and went into, what happened was it went into that, I guess it's limp mode.
Yep.
And then I saw the temperature gauge going up, so I pulled over as soon as I saw that, of course. And I don't know if there's the most likely culprit for that car with that issue.
Okay. Well, the thing that I was going to ask you, what's the temperature on highway or city? But then you said, and I'm sure correctly so, It happens pretty quick, and so
pretty quick. Yeah, I mean, I like a mile, and it's doing it.
Okay, that could easily be a thermostat that's stuck. It could easily just be that. That's not a real big deal, but and you know, this is how you would know that. You'd take a temperature gun that you buy. You should have a temperature gun. Everybody should have a temperature gun because we are diagnosing crazy stuff with temperature guns. But the thermostat's in front of the upper hose. So you can't really gun the upper hose where it hits the thermostat, but you can go behind that and gun some of the runners across the intake manifold. So if you're gunning those and they're running 240, 250, then you gun the upper hose and it's 30 degrees cooler. Ooh, there's what's in between. What's in between the coolant in the motor and the coolant in the radiator? The thermostat. Now, it could be on the lower hose and blah, blah, blah. But I want to caution you, you can't afford... Now, when you say it overheated, did it get to the three quarters or did it touch the red?
No, it didn't get. I saw it going up. I pay attention to that.
Okay.
And it didn't get anywhere near super hot.
Okay. Because three quarters, I don't want you to get within two needle widths of the red mark. And you can also pull the radiator cap if the upper hose is cold as your wife's heart, then you can take the radiator cap off and see if there's coolant in there. She doesn't know, and it's between you and me, but I can doctor this tape up. So if she calls me, I'm going to make you sound like you said that. Nevertheless, thank you for laughing because that's worth it to me. But you could be low on coolant. You could have a water pump that's leaking, and now we're critically low on coolant. You said city, because city, we got a fan problem. On highway, the overheat goes away. Well, we're forcing so much air through the radiator, we don't need an electric cooling fan. So this isn't tough. Who do you do your work? Do you have a shop that you love?
I do.
Okay.
I do have a shop in Mesa that I use. I've used them for years. I just haven't brought it over there yet. The other thing was, how long does a radiator last? This car's got 165,000 miles. Do they go out very often?
No, the answer is no. Most of the time they're out, they go out because of neglect of the cooling system or a tremendous overheat. That's usually why we replace them. Sometimes they come blown up, but a lot of them have a small pinhole here or there, and if you want to try a stop leak, go ahead. But all you're doing is putting a Band-Aid on a major artery that's about ready to explode. But in reality, let me tell you, if we process 20 cars a day, I bet we go 3 weeks before we hit our first radiator. So, and maybe one a month, maybe, and I'm guessing. But and let me just tell you, the risk factor is really small.
Okay. I mean, that car, I mean, are they prone to overheat, you know, or just...
Nope. It has everything to do with how it's been serviced and why it's overheating. Is it overheating because the thermostat's locked up? Is it overheating because it's got a low coolant condition? Is it overheating because the fan's not coming on? Or is it overheating for some other reasons? I've given you the best I can think of right now. But that's the real question. Okay. Now, worst case scenario, the head gasket's blown. We're aspirating coolant into the cylinders. That creates white smoke. So Paul better be looking at the tailpipe when this all happens. If he sees white smoke, uh-oh. That's a bad deal.
No, it's not doing that.
Okay.
I definitely caught it before we got catastrophic like that. But Okay, well, I guess I'll start with the thermostat and go from there.
Well, and I've told you how to test it. The engine will be a lot hotter than the upper hose when it's attached to the radiator. Now, I must confess to you, some of these European cars, we flow different. We go from the lower hose through the radiator and pump the cool water back in the top. So I'm just looking for a difference. So you can do the bottom and you can do the top. Okay?
Yeah, or whatever. Okay, sounds great. Thanks,
all right.
Mark.
Thank you. 602-508-0960. Gil says that he spent quite a few years at 24th Street and Van Buren. And you got out because of why? Was it because you escaped or because they opened the door?
Let off for good behavior. And the door was cracked open.
Oh, okay. All right. Did you get through the door and then run like hell?
No, I sauntered for the first 50 feet, then I took off.
Oh, well, you're like everybody else that's walking down Van Buren. Really, Van Buren and Inschool McDowell, whatever. It's just they saunter. If you want to see people saunter, go to Fifth Avenue in Scottsdale. My God. If you wait for somebody to, you know, walk around you and stuff, you could have a birthday sometime in between there. And it's just people looking. They're looking at all the storefronts and all that kind of stuff. So I don't want to get in trouble with the major people at Scottsdale. Nevertheless, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. We've got five. Everybody calls in the last half an hour. That's exactly what's going to happen right now. But we'll get you in. We'll do the best we can. You're making model. What the symptoms are, and we'll discuss. I'm going to ask you questions, and you're going to answer them. And there's three answers, yes, no, or I don't know. That's okay. I don't know is okay. Then I'm going to tell you what to watch for. So those are the kinds of things that we do really well. I'm a master technician. I've been working on cars for 39 years in the Valley. I'm in West Tempe. I handle all Watuki and West and East Tempe, kind of South Tempe. And I pull cars from all over. But I practice what I preach. So when I tell you about a shop, then I'm talking about good shops, and I would like to think that mine is a good shop. However, I get a complaint every now and then. I'm investigating. If the technician messed up, I raise my hand and say, I'm going to own that one. Sometimes I have to diagnose it before I know whose fault it is, and we'll do that too, on our dime, because we can't say it's not our fault until we know what it is. I want to tell you, every shop on my best car repair shop list has that same philosophy. We're all together in this. We know right from wrong. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Gil's running the airplane. I'm in the back in the comfort zone, and we'll be back in about 3.5 minutes. Minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. And when you call in and Gil tells me who you are, I always ask him, like, if there's a Bobby, is it I-E or is it Y? Sometimes he'll lie to me, and that really makes me mad. So if he does that again, I'm just going to go ahead and give you his cell phone, and you can let him know how you feel about that. Let me tell you about Auto Dynamics in Sun City real quick. They are very trusted for complete automotive services. They've been around a long, long time, since 1982. Chuck Nide opened it up. Derek is now running it. And they just know right from wrong. They have really good staff, really good technicians. And Derek has decided not to pay his technicians a commission or a percent of your repair bill. Therefore, he can ensure that they don't sell unnecessary parts and repairs. So if you're in Sun City and you're looking for a good shop, one that's going to treat you fairly, Auto Dynamics, north side of Grand, just west of 99th Avenue. North side of Grand, west of 99th Avenue. Ladies first. So, Donna, how can I help you?
Hi. I have a 2016 Ford Mustang, and when I got it used, and I didn't just get it, but when I first got it, the radio on AM, it continually crackles when it's wet out.
Okay.
And they supposedly fixed it. Well, it's doing it again, and it's mostly after you go through a car wash or it's wet out.
Okay. This is a stereo shop kind of thing. I think you're best served there, but there's going to be a bad connection at the back of the radio or the antenna. At the connection on it, or it could be just simply the antenna, and water is making the connection. Now,
okay.
AM radio, you might be the only person in the whole world that listens to AM radio.
Well, baseball's on it.
I know. I'm just teasing you. We're on AM ourselves. I'm just teasing you. And another thing you can do to help diagnose it, okay? You get it to where it's crackly, And I want you to roll down the passenger window, put it in park, don't do it in the middle of the intersection, walk around, put your hand on the antenna high, and do a circle, okay, about the size of your head. Then go down to the bottom and just kind of beat on the car fender. The question is can you make a difference in the noise on the radio?
Okay.
Because if you show them, come on out here, I'll show you. And say, listen to that. Okay, watch. When I take the antenna and I pull it over here, see how it changes? Can you fix that? Now, what part of town do you live in?
Well, actually, I live in Washington State.
Okay, okay.
And they changed out the antenna. They changed everything on it when I first took it in, when I first got it in, like, 2014.
Okay.
And it's still now. Still doing it.
Okay, yes. I don't have a good answer for you. Okay. And here, did it have the same water-created problem before and after?
I think so.
Okay.
I really do.
You know, I would still have them, well, if they replaced the antenna, they had to run the cable all the way to the back of the radio. So I'm thinking out loud here. So all we have is an antenna and a connection. Have you ever thought about getting a new sound system or at least a new radio that might have XM or something like that on it?
I guess I could do that, yeah.
That certainly is one of your options. But I know that the stereo shops around me, they'll go in and they'll say, okay, here's what you got, and here's the good, better, best. And this is the labor to pull yours out and plug this in. And you say, you have to ensure that I'm not going to have an AM crackle like the one I have. And young man, come with me. And you show him, even if you have to take a garden hose and spray your car off,
you show him,
and you say, I'll do that, but you need to make sure you fix it. Because if you don't fix it, I'm going to ask for my old radio to put back in, and I'm going to respectfully decline any further work.
Right. Okay.
All righty.
Okay. Sounds good.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. You're welcome. And ladies, if you belong to an organization like a church or anything like that, I speak at those kinds of places. I prefer all women because the guys just want to brag about themselves, and the women have questions, and they're truly asking the question, and it's not a trick question. But anyway, women, I can offer them some real self-defense for car expense. Mark@marksalem.com. Most of the time, my daughter Andy will schedule me. I need to know where it's at and how long you want me to talk, and I can make that happen. It's free, by the way. So if you have any kind of questions, then, yeah, we speak to women. And I enjoy speaking to women because they have learned that the answer is yes, no, or I don't know. And then I'll ask more questions, just like we talked with Donna. Can we wiggle the mast? Can we take it from the top and wiggle it, or can we beat on the fender and make it better? Because maybe it has a bad ground, and the ground is from underside the fender, and if you move that antenna around harshly, and all of a sudden it works good, and what doesn't work, then you say to a guy, I can make it get better. He should be able to figure that out. So nevertheless, 602-508-0960, Bobby and Ray, stay right there. Forty-three minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem. We're here every Saturday, and you're welcome to join us whenever you want. Every Saturday, 10 to noon, and we're talking about cars as we do right now. Real quick, a lady called in, and she's near the area of 44th Street and McDowell, and she wanted to know where there was a place close, and she didn't have time to talk on the radio. So, Bell Automotive is at the 101, north side of McDowell on the 101. And Craig and Vicky are the second generations of the family to run it. And you don't ever have to worry about anybody taking advantage of you, because they got to go through Vicky first. And Craig's like 9 feet tall. So between the two of them, I'm pretty sure that they can keep their technicians and everybody kind of, you know, straight and narrow. So now, on the west of you, 16th Street in Osborne, is Martin's Automotive. And that's a great place to go. Second generation, again, Dave took over from his father, and his father and I were really good friends. So Martin's Auto, I think it's 16th Street and Osborne, Martin's Auto, and then Bell Automotive over at the 101 on McDowell. Let's go to the phones, and Bobby, you're next.
Hey, Mark. Hey, by the way, you got a great voice for radio.
You ought to see how ugly I am.
I'm kind of a radio buff, but since I was 12 years old.
Okay.
But anyway, it was wondering if you ever got any feedback from our on-air conversation of about a month ago. I've got a Mustang, a 14 Mustang GT with that 6R80 automatic transmission. And I was telling you how I elevated the front of it when I dropped the pan. And I carefully measured eight and a quarter quarts of transmission fluid came out.
Okay.
And you were kind of skeptical.
I was.
And I was just wondering if you ever got any feedback from anybody who might have heard our conversation, because when I put it back together, I had to put 8 1/4 quarts back in it to bring it to the right level.
Okay, get a pencil. You got a pencil handy?
I do.
Okay, 480-598-1234. You're going to ask for Alan. And ask Alan for Lorenzo's phone number. And ask Alan for Alger's phone number. Lorenzo and Alger, A-L-G-E-R. One's way north, one's way south. Both of them will have the answer to your question. Both of those guys know, they know transmissions better than I know front of the firewall. They know transmissions and differentials behind the firewall better than I do. So both those guys are young bucks, and they're good guys, and both of them will have the answer for you. Alger and then Lorenzo. Yeah. I don't have their numbers handy. Okay?
Hey, yeah. All right. Thanks a lot, Mark.
You bet. Race, you're up next. How can I help you?
Hey, thanks for taking my call, Mark. So I've got a 2016 Jeep Renegade. So it's got a sputter in the engine when it's in drive but idling. It doesn't have the sputter when it's in neutral or in park. Now, I went a couple hundred miles over the oil change, but it's got brand new oil in it. No known transmission problems.
All right. Let me ask you some questions because you're going off on the tangent. The sputter, is it a vibration you're feeling, or do you actually hear the motor's RPM change?
So the RPM doesn't change, but it does sputter. I can feel it more than hear it.
Okay. See, that's the problem, is we have to use the right semantics. Stutter for us is da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, but you said you could feel it. So it's more likely a vibration that has a different sound to it. Maybe the vibration is worse and better and worse and better. That's not really hard. Here's what you need to do. You need to sit in it when you know it's going to be bad, and you say 1 to 10 with the vibration. What is it in park? And then you put it in drive, and you set the parking brake, and you listen to it and gauge it. Now you touch the brake pedal. I'm taking the vacuum booster away from all of this. So parking brake on, put it in drive. How does it feel? Put it in reverse. How does it feel? Take the parking brake off, put your foot on the pedal, and drive, reverse, neutral. All of that will help the guy diagnose your car. How many miles are on that Jeep? Or on that Renegade?
48,000.
Okay. I don't think it has a bad motor mount, but I've been wrong before. They replaced one on my wife's car the other day, and I made him keep the old one, but they know it's not a good idea to mess with my wife. So, but in your particular case, if you can feel it, then the second question is do you feel it through your foot? Do you feel it through the steering wheel or from the seat of your pants? All of that needs to be answered. I want you to come outside and I want you to feel something, and I'm going to walk you through this, and then I want to know if you can find out what it is. No one ever does that to us, but that's a great idea. Okay, if I say so myself.
Yes.
All righty. Good luck to you, Race.
All right, then.
All righty. Wayne, you're up next, Rain. How can I help you?
Well, let me say I appreciate your wisdom, knowledge, and experience, and the fact that you do this as a service to everyone.
Yes.
Free of charge every Saturday.
That's exactly right.
My thought was, I think that you would be a tremendous help to people if you had a preventative maintenance tip of the week. And 1 week you tell us why we ought to change our radiator hoses in Arizona and when. And then you got a lot of single moms know probably not very much about automobiles. And so Should we change the brake fluid ever, or the steering fluid, or how often should we change the coolant?
Okay.
Have the transmission, automatic transmission fluid changed?
Right. I can answer all that.
Because the temperature, I know you can.
Okay.
And the temperature here in Arizona presents some different analogies than we might be accustomed to if we came from California where it's cool or Michigan where it's cold or whatever.
No, it's that's really
not
true because, okay, I thank you for the suggestion, but if, let me change your question. Mark, how do you decide? We have 30 cars in our fleet that include rental cars, company cars. I got a couple. My wife's got a couple. So, Mark, what do you do on yours? When do you change the hoses and belts? I'm an 8-year 80 guy, but I match the owner's manual on most everybody. So 8-year 80,000, I might go to 100. But everything you ask about is in the owner's manual, and they're all different. So you really can't do a blanket oil change because if it's conventional oil, it's 3,000 miles to 5. If it's a semi-synthetic, it's 5 to 7. And if it's a synthetic, it's 7 to 12. So those are kind of how it is. Now, if the cap on your car says 0-20, that's synthetic, and you're automatically in the 10,000-mile range. But you can't go 10,000 miles without checking oil every once in a while. So brake fluid, we have equipment that tests the brake fluid for moisture. And if it looks like coffee, then, yeah, that's something that gets my attention. But on the other hand, here's what happens. We get a little bit of dirt inside the calipers and in the master cylinder. So we flush and flush and flush. And the customer comes back a month later and says, it looks like coffee again. We change the brake fluid and we use a hydrometer to see what the boiling point is and all that kind of stuff. But, yeah. Yeah, all we did is dig up a bunch of that dirt that sits all over the system, and we turned it. It's like diluted iced tea. So transmissions,
sure.
Yeah, transmission's going to be easy, somewhere between 80 and 120,000 miles. You're going to do the fluid and the filter. This is what I tell my customers. I say, I want you to come in, and I want to do the pan about 80,000. I just want to do the pan and filter. I want to make sure there's no snap rings in the pan. I want to make sure this transmission's not coming apart at the seams. So I do the filter and the flush and the pan and the gasket. And then another 80 come in and I'm going to flush your transmission. I'm taking all the fluid out. Now when I do the pan and the filter, I'm only going to take 4, 4.5, 5 quarts out of it. But when I flush it, I'm going to take all 10, 12 and replace it. So those are the kinds of things. Do you do the cooling? Do you flush the cooling system? No, you do the cooling system. You flush it at the same time you do the belts and the hoses. So if you're going to go to 100K on the hoses, then that's when we flush the cooling system. So, but green coolant has a 30,000-mile life, and then pink and orange and red have a different life. So that's why the owner's manual is important. Oil changes. You know what? I have so many people in Ahwatukee that do business with me. And if I know that their annual mileage is 5,000 miles, I'm putting them in a semi-synthetic, knowing full well I can cover that mileage, and I bring them in April every year. And so they go through the summer with fresh oil. And I rotate their tires every other oil change. I keep an eye on their brake fluid. I'd rather do the master cylinder and flush the brake fluid at the same time. I really haven't seen in my life somebody break down or get hurt because of dirty brake fluid. And that's a real lucrative thing to do. So, and then you got all the other stuff, the differentials. I bet most of them are on a 100,000-mile call. I think most of them, about 100,000 transfer cases, a little less maybe. Transmission and transfer cases for a four-wheel drive, they're probably the same. But the best thing to do is just ask your shop owner and just change the question to this. When do you change your wife's transmission fluid? How many miles a year does she drive? When do you change your kids or your own? You'll get an answer at that point. If everything you ask him, he says now, then I think you need to find another shop because he thinks he's got a fish and you're hooked already and he's going to tell you everything right now. But, you know, I help people with their owner's manual because I can look it up on the computer. And so if they email me, they may ask a question. But normally if they give me a phone number, I'm just going to call them back and say, get your owner's manual and let's go through this together. But your shop really has that responsibility. And more times than not, the technicians are responsible for looking at the maintenance schedule. And they'll either use a software program we have or that they'll actually pull your owner's manual out. So if you get your car back and the owner's manual's in your glove box, not the way you left it, it's because somebody looked at it. It's not because we were rifling through your glove box looking for money. So, but thank you for bringing that up, and I will certainly see if they're going to let me do that without talking about coolant names and all that other kind of stuff, because KKNT loves me, but I got to ask for permission for stuff like that. But anyway, thank you very much, Wayne. I'm ready. Gil, who we got?
We have Dennis.
Dennis, how are you? Dennis?
Hello.
Hi.
Yes, I'm sorry, I was just getting my air checked at Discount Tire. Boy, they're great. They do that for free. Reason I'm calling is because I've got a 2004 Astro van that had a small drip in one of the transmission lines going up, the cooling lines going up the radiator, and it wasn't big enough drip for me to tend to right away. It didn't hardly drip except for when I was on the road. So now I've created a situation where I've just got this oil all over the inside and outside of everything, under the chassis, up in the engine compartment, the inside of the hood.
Okay, I understand all that. Let me ask you some questions. Let me ask you some. Is it at a fitting or is it in the middle of the line?
Well, I've since had the line replaced, and the reason I'm calling is there a place anywhere in Phoenix that will steam clean everything? I mean, the hood, the inside, the engine, the bottom, the brake lines. I mean, everything. It's just a horrible mess.
No. I don't know anybody that's going to do that. I don't. If I were you, I'd call a couple of body shops and ask them if they have somebody that. And you want the top, front, and bottom. You want 360 degrees and the top and the bottom pressure tested.
Yeah.
Or pressure.
Yeah. Great. So I really created a monster.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, us guys with self-service car washes don't like to see guys come in like you. You drive the front tires up on a ramp, you crawl underneath it, you hold up the bay for 400 hours and all that stuff. But the top of the engine, you can go to your self-serve car wash and do a good job yourself. Use their degreaser, shut the hood, go wash the rest of the car, come back, open the hood, and then get out your high-pressure soap and rinse it off. And if you have electronic ignition, and I'm sure you do on the Astro, then you shouldn't have any problem getting it running. But I can't answer your question, but I think your question is best asked to the body shops because I think they run into this far more than I do. But anyway, thank you very much, Dennis. Good luck to you. Everybody else, my email is mark@marksalem.com. mark@marksalem.com. I have a 2005 Rhino, Yamaha Rhino. It's camouflage, two-seater, has all the maintenance. This is a Salem vehicle, by the way. All the maintenance records, all the maintenance up to date. Oil change 100 miles ago. It's got brand new tires. It's got an extra set of tires and wheels. The tires have 400 miles on it. It has a rigid light bar. It has LED headlights. It has an electric fuel pump, which fixes a problem with the Rhino. It has 2,100 hours and it has 2,100 miles and 563 hours, which is 3.8 miles an hour average. This is a hunting machine. My daughter owns it, $4,500, and I put in OBO, or best offer, because I think she'll sell it for a little bit less than that. But if you're a hunter, this is one of the finest four-wheelers you can get, but it's only a two-person. It's just a driver and a passenger, and it's got a bed on the back of it. So if you're looking for an off-road vehicle, for any reason, 2005 Yamaha Rhino 660, really deluxe and well taken care of. So this was actually mine, then my daughter took it, and now her and her husband have bought something a little bit bigger. So it's been inside almost all of its life, and it's a nice vehicle. Mark@marksalem.com, mark@marksalem.com. See you next week.